Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Let's get down.
Kaya Biz.
Let's get down first.
On the street.
On the air.
On the air. You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. Keep your voice notes coming. We'll get to them in just a moment. And coupled to the, added to the voice notes on payments, you can also share your thoughts on work wellness. Now, I say this because for many of us, we work in corporate spaces, we run businesses, and we're well aware that the wellness of your employees, even yourself as an entrepreneur or director of the business, needs to be prioritized. If you haven't rested, if you're not productive, if you're not at your best, you won't be able to see levels of growth and productivity you need in your organization. But when it comes to the fact that this week is Corporate Wellness Week, what do we see when it comes to toxic leaders and how they're impacting South Africa's workforce? To tell us more, we join on the line by Professor Renata Skuman, Head of Healthcare Leadership at Stellenbosch Business School. Professor Skuman, such a pleasure to have you back on the show again. Welcome.
Good evening, good evening, listeners.
I'm excited to speak to you, and maybe let's just focus on the theme of Corporate Wellness Week, right? As we know, this has been a big drive behind many businesses to make sure that they prioritize the well-being of their employees. But I guess, what's the uptake been like in South Africa? Are we seeing businesses being responsive to prioritizing the wellness of their employees?
Because since 2017, we started with a corporate mental health awareness drive, there was definitely an upward curve. I think the peak was most likely reached during COVID and in the short aftermath after COVID, where people was really aware that you need to look after your employees. However, more recently, it has dwindled a little bit. Businesses are under pressure. And I think in terms of the bottom line, which they need to report to the stakeholders, and especially also and I am worried that it has become a little bit of wellness washing, if we can use that term, similar to greenwashing, where it's now more a matter of we say we do it, but we don't really do it. And the other problem that we've seen is where the conversation almost, where we initially start with this organizational responsibility, but there's still a personal responsibility for employees to take care of their own personal health and self-care, that it has leaned over this pendulum, a swing to where employees almost sit back and think, you know, it's the organization's duty to take care of me and I don't have to do anything to myself. Almost a little bit of a victim mentality. And it's important that we get things back on track and to understand that it's a shared responsibility when we talk about mental health, that it's shared between the employee and the employers.
Definitely. I'm so intrigued by your views. And I think this is really important that we discuss it, right? Because fundamentally, the wellness environment in the organization and the well-being of the employees does translate into the outcomes of productivity for the organization. Help us contextualize that, because sometimes we still have, I hate to say it, baby boomers, you know, thinking that work is work. Separate your feelings from the function and just produce. But are we finding that more and more data does show that there is a strong correlation between wellness and productivity of a workforce?
Definitely. And it speaks to psychological safety and culture in a workplace where we can talk more freely about mental health and mental health challenges and that there are more support. You mentioned now the baby boomers, but if we look at the young generations again, there is this fallacy that life and work is two separate cities. You know, they talk about work-life balance and everything is, I won't put in anything outside of corporate hours, for example, because I have my personal life. Where work is an integral part of life. It gives meaning to life. It makes your lifestyle, never mind your survival, able. And I think it's also important that we think or understand there isn't something like work-life balance. It's really like work-life boundaries. Yes. But that both that you won't be always the best, but you can always do your best, whether it's your self-care, whether it's exercise, whether it's your work. But that you also need to understand that if you are prepared to put in the extra, you will reap the benefits, not only your organization, but you will see promotions, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a delicate balance. You can't just say we do what we are expected. We only stick to our job description, because then you can't turn back then 6 months later and be upset if you are not seen to exceed your targets and might not come up for a promotion. So it is to understand all of that and to put it in context. But yes, organizations, if there's a healthy culture, if we have good leadership, if there is mental health support, there's less turnover of employees, which also save money, and there's less loss of knowledge, which saves money. And if you save money, you can provide more of the support to your employees.
Yes. Oh, you've put it so beautifully, Prof. And I love what you've also introduced us to, not the concept of work-life balance, but work-life boundaries, because it's true. If you have financial problems, it impacts your productivity at work. If your family relationships with your spouse, your children, and an ill loved one, if you are in ill health, it influences your work. If work is stressing you out, it influences your relationship with your loved ones at home. So it's so interwoven. But I do want to bring it closer to a theme that speaks to leadership in the workplace, where the challenge is at work and you happen to find yourself being in either a toxic environment and with toxic leadership. Now, Prof, this is a phrase that has been thrown around so often that I sometimes think, you know, it gets murkied in the water and has almost become a catchphrase. So maybe let's just describe what toxicity is in the workplace and what a toxic leader typically demonstrates as characteristics.
So we talk about dark leadership or toxic leadership, and that is a leadership style that's characterized by behaviors that are harmful to individuals and organizations, and it's linked to increased stress, anxiety, depression, reduced job satisfaction, and high employee turnover rates. So it creates a environment in the organization of fear, mistrust, reduced psychological safety, which is integral to mental well-being, and then also diminished employee engagement and productivity, which is then a vicious spiral in terms of also leading to burnout and other complications. Mm-hmm.
And maybe let's expand on that even further, right? Because so often when it comes to identifying dark leadership, look at how we interact directly with the leader, or is there still an assessment of how the group, a group of employees, and the overall feeling of the culture within the organization can attest to this dark leadership?
Yeah, I think what is important for me, people throw around labels very easily these days, or use the terms very loosely. We're not referring to challenging bosses yet. We all have challenging bosses, or most of us. But we talk about narcissism and psychopaths, which have distinct clinical identifiable traits. So we need to identify this accurately and not wrongfully label some people, which can actually increase conflict. Mm-hmm. We also need to understand that some of the traits that narcissists and psychopaths have can be advantageous for leaders. It's only when it's used for destructive purposes or when it causes functional distress in employees and in others that we consider it really a disorder or where it is bad for the organizations.
Got you. And show us, you know, what are the signs, as you've mentioned, you know, there are some personality traits that we need to be mindful of. So what does dark leadership look like? How do we identify it?
So there's two big groups that I would like maybe to highlight. The one is narcissism. We have grandiosity, entitlement, the constant need for admiration, lack of empathy, arrogance, and hypersensitivity to criticism. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is psychopathy, where there's superficial charm, manipulative behaviors, lack of remorse or empathy, impulsivity, and an inability to connect or shallow affect. Now, that is the dark side of the traits. But if we look at the positives, it can be advantageous for leaders. So both of them, narcissists and psychopaths, can easily rise to the top because they have charm, they are fearless, they are risk takers, which is perceived as strong leadership traits. They can also be brilliant strategists, have the courage and even audacity to push through massive change and transition, even though there's risk. And they have the ability to communicate compelling visions and skill using their charisma to inspire and attract followers. But where it becomes toxic is where these rising stars are masters of self-image and they surround themselves with codependent people that actually only commit to their own agenda.
That sounds important. And I guess before, you know, we really need to evaluate how our experience is with this person and identifying them within the ecosystem. So as an employee who is witnessing dark leadership and some of these characteristics here, How do I need to respond as an employee, you know, and establishing clear boundaries to make sure that I don't get into a tussle or a struggle and experience the toxicity of that leader?
Now, if you recognize any of these traits, let's call it traits, it's very important that you establish clear boundaries, maintain professional distance, and document interactions clearly. It's very important to seek organizational support, whether you engage HR or utilize employee assistance programs, but also be transparent in terms of this, what's happening, and communicate maybe with some of your fellow team members just to see what is their experience, because sometimes we can be very subjective in our experience. It's important to prioritize self-care. And once again, it speaks to that work-life boundaries. What we know with narcissists, they often manipulate information channels, and they also often have unreasonable requests and demands for responsiveness. So make sure that you do switch off your technology or separate from your technology, and make sure that you have emotional and social support networks, whether at work or in your personal space. And then stay objective. Make sure that you evaluate your performance clearly and keep on focusing on the facts. It will be distressing. You will be emotional, but stick to the facts and document it clearly. Try to also keep conversations in writing, or follow up a conversation with summarizing the key points in writing, so that you have a paper trail, well, a technology trail, I should say, that you have, that you can use if needed.
And I think that's so important, right? Because sometimes we find ourselves in work environments that aren't necessarily very supportive to changing the leadership the leadership is the leadership and you're stuck with it, right? And so many people can attest to this, and we'll definitely hear from our listeners in terms of the voice notes here. But what can organizations do? You know, what can employees do? You've given us some guidelines, you know, to follow through, document everything, you know, be mindful of the boundaries that are needed in your experience. But sometimes we feel so overwhelmed and so frustrated because at the end of the day, this person is someone you need to report to. So what can organizations do to provide a better level of support?
I think it's important that boards have a responsibility, and then also the HR department. So it's important to detect these dark traits early, and specific even in your hiring practices, where you can use specific psychometric screening specifically for senior roles that measure the psychological behavior and traits. It's also important to encourage feedback with anonymous tip lines or exit interviews to understand why people might leave, so to uncover the toxic behaviors before they escalate. To emphasize fairness, transparency, and open door policies, and maybe diluting power to subtle manipulators. So instead of having one person, maybe have a group of leadership instead of just one hierarchical, one reporting line. And then put employee well-being support in place, so wellness programs, mental health care access, and HR safeguards. And finally, and most likely that is a place where we fail as a country as well, is to hold leaders accountable with clear consequences for abusive behavior, manipulative behavior, and distortion of the truth, and have clear protocols and HR and legal interventions as part of SOPs in an organization.
Prof, I think this is so insightful, right? And again, for those who might find themselves frustrated, because typically as employees, we are part of a collective, but we also individuals who are trying to show up. Are there ways within which, you know, we can, if there isn't sufficient support within the organization, are there ways within which we can try to navigate the environment in the workplace where there might be toxicity or toxic leadership? In other words, external levels of support that might assist.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's just your social support system, you know, having a friend or a trusted other that you can bounce things off and just do a reality check for you. But I often encourage having an external coach, an executive coach or a corporate coach. And then also, if need be, when you take psychological strain, reach out for professional help, whether it's a psychologist or a general practitioner or a psychiatrist.
Does it also matter the kind of industry that you happen to be in? I can imagine there's certain studies on this too, given that the work dynamics would be very different for everyone.
Yeah, there is studies. The important thing, I think, in the South African context, that we know that over the past couple of years, we've really reached the white collar workers. It's difficult to reach the blue collar workers. There's not necessarily all that support and that access that they need. And then the other thing is also the language barrier. So a lot of the corporate mental health work we do is usually in English, maybe Afrikaans. But how do we reach people that speak different languages? We're not enough psychiatrists. There's definitely not enough leaders in the corporate mental health workspace that's prepared to translate these conversations and really equip and support the other employees as well.
Sure. Prof, I can go on and on with this conversation with you because there's so many layers to it. But thank you so much for helping us understand the dynamics of toxic leadership or dark leadership in the workplace, how to identify it, how to safeguard against it, and most importantly, how organizations can also assist in providing employees with support. And as you said, no work-life balance, work-life boundaries is what we need to work on. Thank you so much, Professor Skooman.
My pleasure, Kuku. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Professor Renata Skooman, Head of Healthcare Leadership at Stellenbosch Business School, joining us tonight as we kickstart Corporate Wellness Week and understanding the impact of toxic leadership in South Africa's workforce. I'm keen to hear your thoughts. We've been talking about so much, from payments and, of course, toxic work environments. Do keep your voice notes coming, rather, and that can come through on our WhatsApp voice note line. 063-688-0959. There have been so many voice notes. We're going to build up on this conversation. So keep them coming. 063-688-0959. And stay with us because part of that conversation that we're also going to have a look at, you might recall a few of the voice notes that we've had from you, the likes of Teboho and Nako, who said they are card people. They like thoroughly enjoy using cards. But Zamile and a good friend of mine as well, Songezo Mapeke, shared thoughts that, hold on, it's one thing to use your card payments when you're in urban cities like Johannesburg or Cape Town or Durban. But once you go home, the rurals, emakhaya, is Lalin. That's where it becomes very difficult and you need to have cash on you because the ecosystem just doesn't allow for digital payments. But what if I told you that, you know what, there are some companies who are looking to introduce a cashless ecosystem in the taxi industry, but what if we could think about this being used everywhere else and its adoption? So stay with us. In a moment, we will speak to the CEO of Waxed Solution. Anthony Stewart will join us in a short while to give us an understanding as to how we can make taxis cashless. Ooh, can you imagine? No more counting change in the front seat. Hey, share your thoughts. 063-688-0959.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.